This is Pete Fletzer. On this episode of Around the Galaxy, we're going to visit with writer, filmmaker, and horror podcaster William Bill Prystock. We'll talk about the importance of strong women in Star Wars, as well as the wonderful gray area between darkness and light in your favorite universe. So strap yourselves in, relax, and enjoy this journey around the galaxy. Thank you so much for joining me today on Around the Galaxy. How are you?
Excellent. Thanks for having me, Pete. Appreciate it.
Not a problem. Why don't you probably introduce yourself better than I could, so why don't you tell us a little about yourself?
My name is Bill Prystock. Most people know me as Billy Crash from the Last Knock Horror Podcast, and I'm an author and a filmmaker, and my daytime job is a medical copywriter.
Excellent. Living the dream there.
Something like that.
Yeah. So you're what genre would you say you're I know you have your two novels out, right? Bloodletting and the follow-up just came out, right?
Yeah, Punishment. Crime thriller.
So I'd love to just sort of, you know, start by asking you a little bit about what the role Star Wars has played in your life. I know that's a very broad way to start, but I think we've all kind of, you know, if you're, regardless of where you are in your fandom, Star Wars has played some sort of role. And, you know, did it start in your childhood? Did you discover it later? Maybe tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, man, I was there 1977. I was 12 years old. I saw these amazing trailers for this incredible looking science fiction, well, what turns out to be science fantasy film.
Right.
On television, I was freaking out. Robots and these creatures and spaceship battles. And I mean, I remember looking at the Flash Gordon serials, you know, with the rocket ships on a string with the firecrackers behind them. And I'm like, this is, I gotta go, you know?
It was interesting how it like, there was, you could even tell from those commercials and the original trailers and even the first t-shirt that I had that this wasn't cheesy sci-fi somehow. It didn't seem like it anyway.
No, and I know it was funny. I met a woman at the bar who was talking about the original Star Wars, and she's like, well, I actually just saw it for the first time. And I'm like, oh, really? And she said, yeah, you know, it looked a little. And I'm like, you don't understand. That set the standard for a whole new, it was a watershed event in science fiction in regards to spaceships and making things look cool and amazing and really taking it up a whole bunch of levels, you know?
And
my parents were so cool. I remember the day. It was crazy in New Jersey. It was raining. Couldn't get tickets for the first show. We stood in the rain, like around the block, like the theater, like the line just snaked around forever. Waited in the rain for 3 hours to get to this thing. Saw it in Sensoround. I was sat next to my dad. And in the beginning, once it opened, because of the sound that they were using, which was insane, that Star Destroyer, when it's first coming over, rumbling.
Yeah.
The whole place was shaking. My dad and I are looking at each other. Our eyes are bugging out of our heads. And I'm like, this is just amazing. And I'm going to tell you something that it's going to sound maybe a little weird at first, but I think everyone will get it. You know, I grew up on that cheesy science fiction stuff with Flash Gordon and all these other bad movies where, you know, all the captains had of the ships had short hair and they spoke like this. And
Right.
And the thing I hated the most were the women in these movies, not because they were women, but because they fainted.
Right.
They screamed. They never did anything. They always hid behind the captain of the ship. I'll protect you. No, all that garbage that I hated. And I grew up around strong women. My mom and every, you know, they were tough. You didn't mess with them. They're like a gang. They'll smack you around. So I'm watching a movie and I, you know, I'm getting into it and I see this Princess Leia and I'm like, oh, you know, I was just, cause I was thinking, you know, the old way.
Right. Well, that first shot of her, like she gets blasted, she falls down and you're like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And I was like, no, none of that damsel stuff. And you know, when Luke's like, oh, aren't you too short to be a stormtrooper? Well, I'm Luke Skywalker. I'm here to rescue you. And it's like, oh, man. And she's like, give me that blaster. And she starts storm. I went, yeah. I'm like finally, you know, it's like before Sigourney Weaver, before anybody else. You could, yeah, actually, after Pam Grier, you know, is coffee and stuff.
Yep.
You know, it's like, here we, this is great. And I'm like, I just loved it. And it rocked my world. And it helped shape me as a tween, you know?
Yeah, you know, it was that's a really interesting point. And I think that's one of the things they do try to, I feel like at times they try to make sure people are aware of that, that's where it started. But it was funny because even the movies that it took a while for at least a couple years, it wasn't immediate, but it was, what year was Alien? What was that, 79?
79, yeah.
Yeah, and so that was following in that footsteps of, you know, the woman can really, she can kick some ass. She can really be a leader. And I think it was great too, because Carrie Fisher, how old was she at the time? Like 19. She was very young.
And very awesome.
And so it's just every time I talk about her, I just get a little bit saddened because she was just such an important part of the universe. But I think what's interesting and I think what worked for me about her in that film was, I'll never forget the scene where she goes before Tarkin for the first time that we see. And she's just like, she's no bones. She's as rough and bad and sort of, I don't know. No.
And tough.
Yeah. And she just spits it out at him. And I think even in the original script, there was a scene where she spit in his face, which I wish they had left in. Maybe it was a little too much for 77, but.
That would have been great because she was it was great because like there's a leader right there, you know, it's like, you know, and the funny thing, just to go back real quick, Sigourney Weaver, that part for Ripley was written for a man.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. And they didn't change the dialogue at all because they were like, wow, she's just, this is perfect. This woman's great. And ta-da, so there you go. But yeah. And, you know, talking about, you know, Grand Moff Tarkin, you know, when he blows up Alderaan, you know, it was like, and he just had that little wry smile.
Yeah.
And it's like, you destroyed an entire planet, culture, history, people, past, future. Like, it's like, you got this little, like, what a sociopath. It's like, it blew my mind. I'm like, wow, my gosh, this is incredible.
You know, yeah, it's funny because the, we'll probably get to it a little bit later, but I don't know how close you are with the recent line of sequels. And there's a lot of people who expect Kylo Ren to be redeemed in the new movies. And of course, the redemption of Darth Vader. And I don't know if it's because our society has changed or what, but to basically have Darth Vader, for example, be redeemed simply by killing the Emperor at the end of Return of the Jedi, he did a lot of bad things.
Well,
how are you redeemed for that one thing? And I think there's a lot of kind of talk about how is a character redeemable? And I think it might have to do with today's sort of opinion of what redeemable means.
No, I like that a lot because it, you know, when he did that act in the end, you know, and it's like, you know, he did that one good act and it's like, yeah, that's great. Congratulations. You're not fully like, you know, you just, it, to me, it's like taking a dirty car and just wiping off a piece of the fender. It's like, we gotta, you know, okay, he did that one nice thing going out so people could tell the story of like, yeah, Darth was awful. But, you know, in the end, you know, he did this one good thing. And I was like, okay, but that doesn't excuse.
Right.
You know, everything else. No,
right. I, you know, it's funny. You don't really think of, I don't think of, and it's because it's a sci-fi movie, but when you begin to apply sort of those real world moral values to blowing up a planet and, geez, that's really nasty. But of course, you know, it's the old Silent Bob and Jay Mallrats conversation about, you know, blowing up the Death Star, all those contractors that were working, they've been taken out too. So, I guess maybe you just got to chalk it up to war is hell. And that's
And speaking of war, because this is something that no one has ever been able to explain to me, and it's haunted me since I first saw the movie.
Yeah.
The original. You know, they're doing the whole thing with the Death Star. It's like, we got to go down this trench, you know, we got to like lob these torpedoes in, you know, hopefully we'll make it, you know, good luck, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, why didn't they just go from on top and just shoot straight down into that hole?
Yeah. You know what? Now you've ruined everything. No, that's a great point. Damn physics, it seems to be. That makes sense.
I'm like, I don't get it. And I'm like 12, and I'm like, this is awesome, but I don't get it. You know, it's like.
But you know what? If you do chalk it up to, obviously, you know, as writers ourselves, we know that's the dramatic tension, but there's something amazing about that trench scene to me. Now, I've seen the movie. I can't even imagine if I had to figure out the number of times since 1977. And I'll tell you what, every time Luke goes down that trench, in my head, there's a chance he misses. And I don't. So that works so well, I think, as a device.
It's fantastic. And I love it. I mean, that whole scene, that was the most intense space fight scene ever, you know, at the time. And I mean, I was just mesmerized, and I'm still so enthralled with the movie. I mean, there's what, like the most continuity errors ever in a film. I've only spotted three because it's like, I just can't look for it. I'm just in entrenched in this story. And like you said, so many moons ago, it was the fairy tale for a generation that didn't have one. And it was just so riveting, you know, stay on target, you know, just like, you know. Yep.
There's an interesting conversation on another podcast that I listened to, and I wish I could remember which one it was, and I would love to give them credit. But there was a conversation about how Star Wars, when it came out, you and I were talking about moments ago, how it did set the standard. It set the bar for everything that came out. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember I saw Close Encounters of the Third Kind after that, and I was like, that was cool, but it's not Star Wars, Dad.
What I said too.
Yeah. It pretty amazing. But what these guys were saying was that Star Wars has almost become its own genre. We can't argue that it's its own mythology, and of course all mythology lives from other mythology, but it's become its own genre. And you start to look at things like, for example, all science fiction movies after Star Wars went from the shiny, super clean, futuristic look to the lived in world, right? And so there's that
garbage Millennium Falcon and Mos Eisley, everybody like all dusty and dirty and skanky,
right? So have you found that movies that came after that, did you compare them to Star Wars? And what about things even outside the genre? Was that did that affect you at all when you watched some films?
Yeah, no, it did. I can't like, I remember being upset with Close Encounters because I was like, well, they copied that from Star Wars, even though like I'm trying to remember what that could possibly have been. I was just so Star Wars centric as a kid, you know. It's a hard movie not to copy because it had such an amazing impact. I mean, this is one of, I mean, this movie helped, along with Jaws, helped change Hollywood. And not for the better.
Yeah.
Because these were summer blockbusters, and blockbuster became the thing. Anytime, you know, to use the baseball reference, anytime Hollywood made a movie, they wanted to hit a home run every time because of Jaws and Star Wars. And that was it. I mean, it was hard not to see this stuff carry over, especially when you have the scoundrel, you know, Han Solo, who's like, the bad guy who's good, you know, and it's like. Yeah. You know, so many of those characters, and you know, it's a coming of age story for Luke Skywalker, and those never go away.
Right. I think I know your position on this, but how have you come down at all on the sequels and the prequels? And I have a specific follow up question for you on that. But what's your sort of take on those? I know you're an OT guy, an original trilogy guy, but. Where do you come down on those films?
I'm an original first two guy. I mean, I love the first two very much so. The third, I was like, there's stuff going on in here that was just lame and light and foolish and just silly and just didn't really work. The three afterwards were just like, you know, bad soap operas to me. Bad dialogue, just not engaging. Rogue One, you know, was cool. And the J.J. Abrams remake, you know, I know some people are really upset by it. I thought it was, I had a good time. It was the first time I felt that sense of coolness a little bit, from the first two. And I think, you know, Abrams was bringing the movies, the franchise back to the fans.
Yeah.
You know, cause I got upset with when Lucas was like, well, these are my movies and I could do whatever. And I'm like, no, they're not your movies. And I say that as a writer, you know, and I have a book and it goes out and people love it or they hate it. And it's not my book anymore. It's theirs.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And, you know, he's like, well, I'm going to change this. And that. I'm like, no, you can't. You know, it's like, it's carved in stone, man.
But
the first two originals. I mean, I still have my original DVD set that has the originals and the remade ones, the do-overs. And right. I only saw the first one in theaters. That was like as soon as Han shot first, shot second. I'm like, what is this? I was livid, you know.
It changed his character, and you know, I think so. It's funny that you say that about J.J. Abrams' reboot, because he's, you know, of course, he's got a reputation or had a reputation certainly going into there of rebooting franchises. And, you know, I thought he did a decent job with Star Trek. I'm not a Star Trek fan per se, but I enjoyed what he did those movies. Mm-hmm. But my take on the Force Awakens was that, you know, he absolutely gave us a new hope with different wrapping. And to me, he did a classic reboot. I mean, it's the same. Mm-hmm. There are even beats. There are certain, like the movie opens with the bad guys invading and breaking in and capturing. And I mean, right down to the fact that there was secret plans put into one of the robots and had to escape. And you know what? That's actually okay. What he did was he retold the story and brought you back to this next wave of Star Wars. And you had you couldn't reboot it. You couldn't have Luke and Leia and Darth Vader because it's still too close and it's still too good to reboot. Of course, good movies being rebooted isn't necessarily mutually exclusive, but to me it was I actually enjoyed it as a reboot, and I was able to get really comfortable with that as the way that movie came out.
Yeah, and Daisy Ripley, I mean she was just amazing in it, and I was like, man, she's like instant A-list. Nobody heard of her, you know?
Yeah.
Bam. And no, I'm with you on that. But like the first two, I mean, it's funny, the books that I had written, my character in every book, there's Star Wars references. He just has to.
Are they overt, or is it just your tip of the hat to Star Wars?
No, it's not. It came about by accident. It just came about. I was writing about the character in a scene one day, and he was at this club in New York City, and he looked at this one woman, and he described her as being small and round, and she had these like astro puffs that made her look like an Ewok. And you know, so and one guy's referred to as Jabba, not the Hutt. I can't use the word on this show, Jabba. You know, include your favorite four letter F word there. And you know, and you know, he gets his comeuppance like Jabba eventually does. But so yeah, it came about by accident. I just, you know, it's just the character just doing his thing.
That's cool. So I know you tell me a little bit about your podcast. It's been going on for a number of years, and you do spend some time talking about a lot of horror and that genre. Tell me a little bit about that, and then I'm going to try to turn that into a Star Wars question.
Okay, cool. well, it's funny. It's called The Last Knock. It's a horror podcast, and it's been on for 6 years. We just surpassed 300 episodes. My buddy Johnny Numb and I, and we do interviews with horror directors and actors and such as well. And we try to take, I'd say, a more literary approach to horror, because we don't see it as a disposable genre, which a lot of times people do with science fiction and science fantasy.
Right.
you know, it's like, oh, that's just a science fiction story. And I'm like, tell that to Isaac Asimov, man. Like, you know, like, like tell him that, and he'll, you know, if he was alive, he'd punch you in the face. you know, so we try to look at, the value within horror movies and what they're, you know, so people don't dismiss it.
Yeah. You know?
Like so many people do dismiss Star Wars, which is sad. It's like, nah, there's a lot there to mine.
It's interesting because that's kind of what got me back into writing again, following up my some of my Star Wars history and putting this podcast together, because there is, you know, there's some sort of I not even sure what the right word is, but because calling it a community of whether it's you know, horror or science fiction or specifically like Star Wars, which some of the community I've been getting closer to recently and just meeting some great people. And
oh yeah,
the fact that it becomes somewhat dismissed as, oh, you're just a Star Wars fan, or you just like screamo movies, or you're, you know, it really dismisses it, because there's so much art and thinking that goes into those, it as much or more so than half the garbage that we end up seeing on the big screen or on Netflix or wherever it shows up.
Sure. Garbage is definitely the word. And it was funny, even when I was doing my crime thriller novel as a part of my MFA program, my mentor was like, oh, that's just the genre piece. And she wrote me off.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that, thanks a lot. You know, it's like, you know, you're right. I have no points in here at all. It was just like,
it's frustrating.
It. Yeah, if you love it, it's fun. And I mean, Star Wars is fun, but there's a lot of value in there, you know, beyond, you know, just this. It's more than the actual story is, which is great, you know, and that's what makes for good cinema as well.
And that's, I think that's what's great about if you do become a sort of a connoisseur or an expert in a specific genre, because it is so well done. And then you start to find different sort of lessons in it. In fact, I was talking the other day to a podcast called Beyond the Blast Doors, who has, we've been doing, I had written a fan fiction retelling of The Phantom Menace. And I don't know what the hell I was thinking there. I've written, came out at 123,000 words. And I was like, you know, if I come up with my own story, I could have made some money on it perhaps. But oh,
man, you write so well, man. You should come up with your own story.
I'll get there one day, I think. But one of the things that we kind of came to in the discussion was that there are themes happening in all the great stories. And even honestly, you know, you can't get, as you know, from all the trials and tribulations of trying to get a book published and some of the film work you've done, you can't either. You have to have pure glossy candy that is marketable, right? Yeah, that somebody decides, oh, we can sell tickets with that. Or if you really have heart and you care about it, it has to be really, really good. So you can't get junk through the system. And so even where I'm going with this is, even with The Phantom Menace, when I started to take apart the story, we can argue back and forth whether or not George Lucas did a good job of creating the film. And actually, we probably wouldn't argue that much, because I don't think that film was as great as some people do. But that's a whole other conversation. Yeah, but there's a lot going on under there. There's deception and this whole concept of, you know, the Jedi who take children from their families at very young ages and manipulate them to do that. They're no better than anybody else. So it's where I'm going with this, is that there's these themes that can be told in a, you know, bubblegum film, or they can be told in a crime thriller, or they can be told in a Lifetime original movie if it's done well. there are, you know, these themes do exist. And so have you found that did Star Wars at all influence you from a storytelling standpoint?
Wow. Yes and no. On the one hand, I mean, like, I can't write, like, I love writing screenplays, but if I were to write some, and I did try once and failed miserably, if I try to write some like epic science fantasy or science fiction thing like Star Wars, it's like, oh wow, I just wrote this movie, and oh wow, it cost $200 million to make. No one's going to talk to me. So it's like, but what Star Wars did for me, and you know, like even in its slow parts in the movie, there was suspense. There was mystery. There was, you cared about the characters, and I think that's what matters most, because I am watching so many films where I could care less about these characters, and they're getting killed or whatever, and I'm eating popcorn and I'm looking at my watch. Yep. And I shouldn't be doing that. And I think one of the most magical elements to the whole Star Wars franchise is even the bad characters. You know, Lucas created these characters that you care about, that you're invested in. A Boba Fett, like, I remember, like, as soon as, like, people saw him, these kids were going crazy about Boba Fett. He was in the movie for, like, I don't know, 5 minutes. And it's like, and he's the bad guy. And everybody's like, man, I got to know this guy more. And so I think from a storytelling perspective, it's like, okay, how could I, in short order, get people invested emotionally in the characters that I create so they care about them, because then they're going to care about the story and you're going to take them for that whole ride.
You know, I think that's a really great point. I love what you said there, because I found when I was digging into the Phantom Menace characters, I fell in love with the Palpatine character as I put my own sort of headcanon to it, and just not because I liked him, but he was a fun character because I wanted to understand him. And, you know, I think that's the thing that people may lose track of sometimes, is you can have fun understanding the most brutal character, and it doesn't mean that he's a good guy. And, you know, unlike, for example, and I think the Marvel Cinematic Universe has been amazing. I've enjoyed every one of those movies, some more than others. But what's interesting with my 6-year-old son, he has no empathy or care about, and empathy is the wrong word, but more no interest in the bad guys. The bad guys are just pure cannon fodder. Even Thanos, he was like, he's a bad guy. Whereas, with Star Wars, I was just talking to him the other day, and I was like, do you like the bad guys or the good guys? And he's like, I kind of like them both. And that's an amazing gray area to create a story. And to your point, it's really, you have to build a good story to be able to get people to be willing to cross the line into the gray area and at least take the time to understand those characters.
No, I agree completely. And, you know, I grew up as a Batman fan, and Batman, Joker, you know, I mean, two sides of the same coin. And it was just, you know, Joker was, you look at the early comic books, I mean, the things that he would do, like killing busloads of people and stuff. And it was like, but you like couldn't not like the hostility in all of his character, because he was like, you know, he did want to watch the world burn, and, you know, he wanted to help make it burn. And, you know, just such an intriguing character that you couldn't dismiss him. He's still probably my favorite villain in all of comic books, whether DC, Marvel, or, you know, independent, you know?
Yep. It's wild that Joker, I think, is a great example of a character who he's a bad guy. You want to know more about, like, tell me his story. And actually, it'll be interesting to see, and not to go off on a tangent, to see if how the Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie works out. I'm not confident because of some of the other films that have come from that studio, but it is interesting that they even have enough fodder to make his story. Like, you probably wouldn't be able to make a Scarecrow background story, right?
No. But they shouldn't do a Joker one either. Yeah. I want the great mystery of the Joker is, where's this guy from? What the heck? You know, what happened? And to not know is beautiful.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't need a backstory, and this is one of those cases. So.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, to steer it back a little bit to Star Wars, I think that's one of the things that I've had a challenge with, you know, years ago when we were in that great void of no Star Wars content after Return of the Jedi, and there was a lot of the books came out. And they were, I felt like they were trying to explain things that didn't need to be explained. They were trying to tell me a story that I didn't really need to know. And I also felt like a lot of the Star Wars novels, and if I'm being honest, I haven't read a lot of the newer ones either, just because to me they become science fiction. They're not building the fantasy. They're creating science fiction from the Star Wars universe.
Agreed. I only read one, and it was the first one that came out after the movies. What the heck was it? Splinter of the Mind's Eye.
Oh yeah, which was going to be the sequel to Star Wars if they didn't get the money. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I was not impressed enough to continue because it was, it was, yeah, the fun was sucked right out of it. That's the way I looked at it. And, you know, it depends. And it's funny because sometimes I want fun, sometimes I don't, but with Star Wars, I want that fun. I want that action. I want to see people like, you know, they have split seconds to make choices. And, you know, Star Wars, I'm still shocked to this day when, you know, Luke returns, you know, with Obi-Wan and to his farm, and, you know, it's all burning, and you see this bloody skeleton of like Aunt Beru. Like,
yeah, that's pretty shocking,
like,
right?
Yeah, and I'm like, wow, you know, it's like Aunt Beru, you know, it's like Uncle Owen, what happened, you know, and you know, like they're just wiped out, and I was like, and that was really actually cool because it painted the picture like these are the Empire is really bad, you know, it's like
right. Well, so now you said, I think you said, did you see Rogue One?
Yes, I did.
And what were your impressions of that? Because that, to me, that fell into that painting a picture in the gray area kind of film.
Yes, it did. And I do like that. I like that very much because I see the whole, and this was really great for me as a 12-year-old too, the whole concept of the Force. It's almost like the universe is full of a neutral energy and you could take from it for, you know, it's like free will. You could, you know, if you could tap into it for good, that's great. And then, you know, dark side, you know, and you could make it your own. And I liked Rogue One because of that whole rebel element and, you know, some of the things that they had to do and what they had to endure on their quest. To me, it was like almost like, it was like a World War II epic film where it's like, well, we have to get the secret plans. You know, it's like, yeah, you know, yeah. You got to make sure the operation gets pulled off, you know. And I was just – that I really enjoyed. And sometimes good characters have to do bad things to do something greater. And so I like that. I like the gray area because nothing's cut and dry. Sometimes, you know, especially like with the first episode, you know, it's like, these are the good guys in Star Wars. These are the bad. And it's like, well, that's not really how it works. You know, it's it would be nice if it was cut and dry like that, but it isn't, you know, you peel the layers away from anybody and you're going to get, you take any hero that you have. And I've taken all my heroes and I've peeled away the layers. It's like, oh, you know, it's like, so then you have to come down to a point like, okay, are they still a hero? What do I excuse? You know, what do I allow in? And it's crazy.
And that's what's, that's, again, I think that was what's kind of cool about Star Wars is it's not, and maybe, you know, as we said before, the fairy tale for the generation that didn't have one, maybe this generation or our generation and the ones after the days of white knights and princesses are kind of gone. Mm-hmm. That's not something that we can associate with. We know that that's not the way of things, even in our wildest fantasies, right?
Yeah, they're not attainable ideals. And, you know, even with Princess Leia and all, you know, she's sent people to their deaths.
Yep.
You know, as much as you love her, as tough as she is, this and that, and as good as she is, she sent people off to die.
Yep.
You know, the whole Rogue One thing, it was the whole thing was a classic suicide mission. And it's like, wow, you know, that's intense stuff. And and then, you know, and that's why one of the reasons I like the reboot, you know, from Abrams too, the first Star Wars is, you know, when they have all those townspeople and they're like, take them out, you know, and it's like, man, if that wasn't like, you know, back to like an old, you know, Nazi story.
Yeah.
You know, like, wow. In fact, I have my Disobey shirt, you know, not too far from me right now. You know? I like the gray a lot. And, you know, like even from the first one, it's like, oh, Han Solo. It's like, oh my God, he's such a great guy. He's tough and debonair. And I'm like, and he's a criminal. And, you know, it's like, you know,
right. They literally hired a criminal to save them.
Yeah, he's a scoundrel. You know, he really is a scoundrel. And I thought that was just awesome, you know.
That's cool. So you're an original trilogy guy, original first two film guy. Yeah. There's a lot going on in the Star Wars universe right now. There's, you know, Episode 9 coming. There's Disney Plus coming with a bunch of TV shows and things. And is there anything that you're specifically, you know, kind of hopeful for or looking forward to that may grab you back and pull you back into the Star Wars world, or are you disillusioned perhaps by some
Disney illusions?
Your Disney illusioned.
Yeah, Disney, when it gets its paws in something, its little mouse paws, you know, it's like, now it's going to be. I always wanted something. I liked Rogue One because it was grittier than the others, and I like grit. And yep. And I'm once like it fell under, you know, the mouse ears, I'm like, oh, forget it. It's not. Will it ever be gritty again? Unless they do a Touchstones picture or something. But
well, Rogue One was under the Disney banner, so
that is true. That so is true.
Hope. I'm hopeful.
But there is a new hope.
There's always a new hope, I suppose. So I have I have this thing that I'm going to try to wrap up conversations with all my guests. I've always loved Inside the Actor's Studio, and the Bernard Pivot questionnaire at the end. So I sort of created a Star Wars one. I have a sense that I know where you're going to come out on some of these, but I want to throw them at you and see what you think. So I'm just gonna shoot for your first response. What's your favorite Star Wars movie, TV show, or book?
It still has to be number one because the way it, I still get chills from it, how it affected me as a child.
Awesome. What's your least favorite Star Wars movie, TV show, or book?
Oh man, that Christmas special, man.
The Christmas special
with R2-D2 fish and all that was just like. I was like, I think as a child, I had to call like suicide hotline or something. I was like, what's happened, man?
It's so funny. I would love to know what was going on in the writing room for that thing, man. There was
a lot of acid dropping,
a lot of smoke in the air, man.
Yeah, totally. A lot of herb.
Are you an Imperial or a Rebel?
Oh, Rebel till the end, man. Gotta. I mean, and it's funny because, like, man, but they look cool. It's like, it's like when we were a kid, it's like, yeah, we beat them in World War II, but the Nazis looked great, you know? And it's like, yeah, but, you know? So I gotta go to Rebel. I gotta go to dirty Rebel outfit and Tatooine dust on my body, man.
Awesome. What's your favorite Star Wars sound effect?
Oh, my gosh. The Star Destroyer, the sound of it, that rumble is just insane. Even though you can't hear anything in space, you can hear the Star Destroyer. Oh, wait, no. That bass when they're gearing up to set off the Death Star, you know,
Yes.
Oh man, that just like rips your guts out. That's it. That's the one.
All right, that's a good one. That's a good one. R2-D2 or C-3PO?
Oh. Dude, that's evil. That's an evil question. I gotta go with R2-D2 because that little thing's got more guts, man. It's got more guts.
Awesome. So if you could own any spaceship or vehicle from the Star Wars universe, which one would it be?
Dude, I gotta get my hands on that Millennium Falcon, man. I have to. I need it.
I think I have a feeling everybody I speak to is going to say that. But yeah, that's just it, right?
Yeah, man. And I want it in full working order, though. It doesn't have to look pretty, but I want that thing to work.
You want the Lando Calrissian version?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So this one you're probably going to give me a hard time on. Porg, Ewok, or Jar Jar Binks?
My gosh. Do I have to pick one?
It's like the shag, marry, kill kind of question, but which one do you want?
Gosh. Oh my God.
You gotta pick one.
That's evil, man. Oh, I'll go with the teddy bears. I'll go with the darn Ewoks, man.
All right.
That was cruel.
That was a mean question. I understand. It's funny. I asked my daughter the same question, and she had the exact opposite reaction. She goes, I can't pick one. They're all my favorite. So that's pretty funny. If you could be any character in Star Wars, who would it be and why?
Oh, man, this is evil, too, because it's hard not to go with Han Solo, man. He's the cool guy. He's got hair. I don't have any hair. He's got hair. You know, he's got the cool, like, you know, he can speak to a Wookiee. He's got the cool ship. All the chicks dig him, you know. How can you deny it? Luke Skywalker, sometimes you want to slap him, you know. And, like, And Ben Obi-Wan Kenobi, he's too cool. I could never be that. You know, give me Han.
All right. I think everybody feels like there's a chance they could be Han somehow, maybe. I don't know. That's a good one, though. I like that one.
I have an attitude.
You do. I could see that. I know your answer on this one, but I got to ask it. Original trilogy, prequels, or sequels?
Oh, the original trilogy.
Yeah. And the last one is, what's your favorite Star Wars quote?
Oh my God, I gotta pick one?
Yes, just one.
Oh man, my favorite, because I use it, I think, every day, man. I gotta go with the Admiral. It's a trap! I just have to, man. That's the quote for my life, man.
That sounds like we could do a whole other podcast on that.
Yeah, we could. Okay.
Well, hey man, thank you so much for spending some time. Tell everybody where they can learn more about you. Where can they get your book, and where can they find your podcast?
Wow. Okay. You could find me at my website for podcast, as well as horror-based articles at CrashPalaceProductions.com. You can get the Last Knock podcast off of iTunes and that website as well. And my book, Bloodletting and Punishment, are both available on Kindle and in paperback. At Amazon, you could just type in my last name, PRYSTAUK, and they'll all pop up. And I think that's it, man. And Crash Palace on Twitter, Crash Palace.
Awesome. Bill, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun. And it's always great talking about the gray area of Star Wars with you. This was a blast. Thank you so much.
I loved it, man. I wish it wasn't over. Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Okay, buddy. Bye.
Well, that wraps it up for this episode of Around the Galaxy. Thank you to Bill Prystok, and thank you for listening. If you had fun, please subscribe, like, and share. If you really liked it, please feel free to head over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/aroundthegalaxy. For about $1 a month, you could send a Wookiee to college. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at ATGcast, and if you or someone you know would make a good guest, please drop me a line. Until next time, this has been Pete Fletzer, and we'll see you for our next trip around the galaxy. Around the Galaxy is copyright 2019 Pete in the Seat Studios. Our theme music comes courtesy of the band Apollo's Ghost. Their self-titled EP has just dropped and is available on iTunes or wherever you get your music.